Chapter 24. Nine breeds of pie for breakfast, as only the rich New Englander can. Not that she may indulge any petty material vanity or appetite that once was hers, and prized and nursed, but that she may apply that dollar to statelier uses, and place it where it may cast the metallic sheen of her glory farthest across the receding expanses of the globe. Prayer, a brief and good one, is furnished in the Book of Bylaws. The scientist is required to pray it every day. The Lord's Prayer amended, this is not in the bylaws, it is in the first chapter of Science and Health, edition of 1902. I do not find it in the edition of 1884. It is probable that it had not at that time been handed down. Science and Health's latest rendering of its spiritual senses as follows. Our Father, Mother, God, all harmonious, adorable one. Thy kingdom is within us, thou art ever present. Enable us to know, as in heaven, so on earth, God is supreme. Give us grace for today, feed the famished affections. And infinite love is reflected in love. And love letteth us not into temptation, but delivereth from sin, disease, and death. For God is now and forever all life, truth, and love. If I thought my opinion was desired, and would be properly revered, I should say that in my judgment, that is as good a piece of carpentering as any of those 11 commandment experts could do with the material after all their practice. I notice only one doubtful place. Lead us not into temptation seems to me to be a very definite request, and that the new rendering turns the definite request into a definite assertion. I shall be glad to have that turned back to the old way, and the marks of the spiral twist removed, or varnished over, then I shall be satisfied, and will do the best I can with what is left. At the same time, I do feel that the shrinkage in our spiritual assets is getting serious. First the commandments, now the prayer. I never expected to see these steady old reliable securities watered down to this. And this is not the whole of it. Last summer the Presbyterians extended the calling and election suffrage to nearly everybody entitled to salvation. They did not even stop there, but let out all the unbaptized American infants we had been accumulating for 200 years and more. There are some that believe they would have let the Scotch ones out too, if they could have done it. Everything is going to ruin. In no long time we shall have nothing left, but the love of God. The new unpardonable sin, working against the cause. Sec. 2. If a member of this church shall work against the accomplishment of what the discoverer and founder of Christian Science understands as advantageous to the individual, to this church, and to the cause of Christian Science, out he goes. Forever. The member may think that what he is doing will advance the cause, but he is not invited to do any thinking. More than that, he is not permitted to do any, as he will clearly gather from this bylaw. When a person joins Mrs. Eddy's church, he must leave his thinker at home. Leave it permanently. To make sure that it will not go off some time or other when he is not watching, it will be safest for him to spike it. If he should forget himself, and think just once, the bylaw provides that he shall be fired out instantly forever, no return. It shall be the duty of this church immediately to call a meeting, and drop forever the name of this member from its records. My, but it breathes a towering indignation. There are forgivable offenses, but this is not one of them. There are admonitions, probations, suspensions, in several minor cases. Mercy is shown the derelict, in those cases he is gently used, and in time he can get back into the fold even when he has repeated his offense. But let him think, just once, without getting his thinker set to any time, and that is enough, his head comes off. There is no second offense, and there is no gate open to that lost sheep, ever again. This rule cannot be changed, amended, or annulled, except by unanimous vote of all the first members. The same being Mrs. Eddy. It is naively sly and pretty to see her keep putting forward first members, and boards of this and that, and other broideries and ruffles of her raiment, as if they were independent entities, instead of a part of her clothes, and could do things all by themselves, when she was outside of them. Mrs. Eddy did not need to copyright the sentence just quoted, its English would protect it. None but she would have shoveled that comically superfluous LL in there. The former unpardonable sin has gone out of service. We may frame the new Christian Science one thus. Whatsoever member shall think, and without our mother's permission act upon his thing, the same shall be cut off from the church forever. It has been said, that I make many mistakes about Christian Science through being ignorant of the spiritual meanings of its terminology. I believe it is true. I have been misled all this time by that word member, because there was no one to tell me that its spiritual meaning was slave. Accent block. There is a bylaw which forbids members to practice hypnotism. The penalty is excommunication. 1. If a member is found to be a mental practitioner, 2. Complaint is to be entered against him, 3. By the pastor emeritus, and by none else. 4. No member is allowed to make complaint to her in the matter. 5. Upon Mrs. Eddy's mere omplaint unbacked by evidence or proof, and without giving the accused a chance to be heard, his name shall be dropped from this church. Mrs. Eddy has only to say a member is guilty, that is all. That ends it. It is not a case of he a be cut off from Christian Science salvation, it is a case of he all be. Her serfs must see to it, and not say a word. Does the other pope possess this prodigious and irresponsible power? Certainly not in our day. Some may be curious to know how Mrs. Eddy finds out that a member is practicing hypnotism, since no one is allowed to come before her throne and accuse him. As he has explained this in Christian Science History, 1st and 2nd editions, page 16. I possess a spiritual sense of what the malicious mental practitioner is mentally arguing, which cannot be deceived. I can discern in the human mind thoughts, motives, and purposes, and neither mental arguments nor psychic power can affect this spiritual insight. A marvelous woman, with a hunger for power such as has never been seen in the world before. No thing, little or big, that contains any seed or suggestion of power escapes her avaricious eye, and when once she gets that eye on it, her remorseless grip follows. There isn't a Christian Scientist who isn't ecclesiastically as much her property as if as he had bought him, and paid for him, and copyrighted him, and got a charter. She cannot be satisfied when as he has handcuffed a member, and put a leg chain and ball on him, and plugged his ears, and removed his thinker, she goes on wrapping needless chains round and round him, just as a spider would. For she trusts no one, believes in no one's honesty, judges everyone by herself. Although we have seen that as he has absolute and irresponsible command over her spectral boards, and over every official and servant of her church, at home and abroad, over every minute detail of her church's government, present and future, and can purge her membership of guilty or suspected persons by various plausible formalities, and whenever she will, she is still not content, but must set her queer mind to work, and invent a way by which she can take a member, any member, by neck, and crop and fling him out without anything resembling a formality at all. She is sole accuser and sole witness, and her testimony is final, and carries uncompromising and irremediable doom with it. The sole witness court. It should make the council of 10 and the council of 3 turn in their graves for shame, to see how little they knew about satanic concentrations of irresponsible power. Here we have one accuser, one witness, one judge, one headsman, and all four bunched together in Mrs. Eddy, the inspired of God, his latest thought to his people, new member of the Holy Family, the equal of Jesus. When a member is not satisfactory to Mrs. Eddy, and yet is blameless in his life, and faultless in his membership and in his Christian Science walk and conversation, Shall he hold up his head, and tilt his hat over one ear, and imagine himself safe, because of these perfections? Why, in that very moment Mrs. Eddy will cast that spiritual x-ray of hers through his dungarees and say, I see his hypnotism working, among his insights remove him to the block. What shall it profit him to know it isn't so? Nothing. His testimony is of no value. No one wants it, no one will ask for it. He is not present to offer it, he does not know he has been accused, and if he were there to offer it, it would not be listened to. It was out of powers approaching Mrs. Eddy's, though not equaling them, that the Inquisition and the devastations of the interdict grew. She will transmit hers. The man born 2 centuries from now will think he has arrived in hell, and all in good time he will think he knows it. Vast concentrations of irresponsible power have never in any age been used mercifully, and there is nothing to suggest that the Christian Science papacy is going to spend money on novelties. Several Christian scientists have asked me to refrain from prophecy. There is no prophecy in our day but history. But history is a trustworthy prophet. History is always repeating itself, because conditions are always repeating themselves. Out of duplicated conditions, history always gets a duplicate product. Reading letters at meetings, I wonder if there is anything a member can do that will not raise Mrs. Eddy's jealousy? The bylaws seem to hunt him from pillar to post all the time, and turn all his thoughts and acts and words into sins against the meek and lowly new deity of his worship. Apparently her jealousy never sleeps. Apparently any trifle can offend it, and but one penalty appease it, excommunication. The bylaws might properly and reasonably be entitled laws for the coddling and comforting of our mother's petty jealousies. The bylaw named at the head of this paragraph reads its transgressor out of the church, if he shall carry a letter from Mrs. Eddy to the congregation, and forget to read it, or fail to read the whole of it. Honesty requisite, dishonest members are to be admonished. If they continue in dishonest practices, excommunication follows. Considering who it is that drafted this law, there is a certain amount of humor in it. Further applications of the acts here follow the titles of some more bylaws whose infringement is punishable by excommunication. Silence enjoined. Misteaching. Departure from tenets. Violation of Christian fellowship. Moral offenses. Illegal adoption. Broken bylaws. Violation of bylaws. What is the difference? Formulas forbidden. Official advice. Forbids Tom, Dick, and Harry's clack. Unworthy of membership. Final excommunication. Organizing churches. This looks as if Mrs. Eddy had devoted a large share of her time and talent to inventing ways to get rid of her church members. Yet in another place she seems to invite membership. Not in any urgent way, it is true, still she throws out a bait to such as like notice and distinction, in other words, the human race, page 82. It is important that these seemingly strict conditions be complied with, as the names of the members of the Mother Church will be recorded in the history of the Church, and become a part thereof. We all want to be historical. More self-protections, the hymnal. There is a Christian Science hymnal. Entrance to it was closed in 1898. Christian Science students who make hymns nowadays may possibly get them sung in the Mother Church, but not unless approved by the Pastor Emeritus. Art. XXVII, Sec. 2. Solo singers. Mrs. Eddy has contributed the words of 3 of the hymns in the hymnal. 2 of them appear in it 6 times altogether, each of them being set to 3 original forms of musical anguish. Mrs. Eddy, always thoughtful, has promulgated a bylaw requiring the singing of 1 of her 3 hymns in the Mother Church as often as once each month. It is a good idea. A congregation could get tired of even Mrs. Eddy's muse in the course of time, without the cordializing incentive of compulsion. We all know how wearisome the sweetest and touchingest things can become, through repetition, and still repetition, and more repetition like the sweet by and by, in the sweet by and by, for instance, and rah-rah-rah-boom-dee-eye. And surely it is not likely that Mrs. Eddy's machine has turned out goods that could outwear those great heart stirrers, without the assistance of the lash. Or waiting harp strings of the mind is pretty good, quite fair to middling the whole seven of the stanzas, but repetition would be certain to take the excitement out of it in the course of time, even if there were 14, and then it would sound like the multiplication table, and would cease to save. The congregation would be perfectly sure to get tired, in fact, did get tired, hence the compulsory bylaw. It is a measure born of experience, not foresight. The bylaws say that if a solo singer shall neglect or refuse to sing alone one of those three hymns as often as once a month, and oftener if so directed by the board of directors, which is Mrs. Eddy, the singer's salary shall be stopped. It is circumstantial evidence that some soloists neglected this sacrament and others refused it. At least that is the charitable view to take of it. There is only one other view to take. That Mrs. Eddy did really foresee that there would be singers who would someday get tired of doing her hymns and proclaiming the authorship, unless persuaded by a bylaw, with a penalty attached. The Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.